Welcome to SMR's This Week in Review podcast, where we highlight the recent news in sports medicine research. This past week's most popular post on sportsmedres.org discussed a recent study that found that healthy individuals exhibit subtle but significant asymmetries between the dominant and non-dominant scapula during clinohumeral motion. Therefore, we should be cautious when using the contralateral shoulder as a reference. Scapular dyskinesis is an umbrella term describing abnormal scapular motion and kinematics associated with various shoulder injuries, including rotator cuff syndrome, impingement syndrome, and shoulder instability. When we evaluate scapular dyskinesis, we often compare the pathologic side with the contralateral side, but this assumes that scapular movement is symmetrical between sides in healthy individuals, which may not be the case. Schwartz and colleagues investigated the effect of gender and type of glenohumeral motion on three-dimensional scapular motion bilateral symmetry in healthy populations, with the hypothesis that sex and type of glenohumeral motion would influence scapular symmetry. The authors recruited 22 volunteers without any complaints of shoulder pain and no history of participation in sports using the upper extremity. An examiner evaluated the participants and ruled out any postural abnormalities, pathology or prior surgeries involving the upper extremities or spine, and any subcoracoacromial or tendinous pathologies. The authors tracked the three-dimensional position and movement of the scapulae as the participant performed three motions for their dominant side. These included abduction in the frontal plane, flexion in the sagittal plane, and glenohumeral, internal, and external rotation with the arm abducted at 90 degrees and the elbow flexed at 90 degrees. The participants had symmetrical resting positions for their scapula. However, among men, the dominant scapula may be a little more laterally or medially positioned compared to with the non-dominant scapula. Despite similar resting positions, the authors observed asymmetrical scapular motion during glenohumeral movements, especially glenohumeral flexion and abduction. Males tended to have more upward rotation of the dominant scapula compared with non-dominant side during glenohumeral elevation. Meanwhile, women had differences related to internal and external rotation and upward rotation of the dominant scapula during glenohumeral elevation. We can draw several conclusions with important clinical ramifications from this study. For one, since subtle scapular asymmetries may exist in the healthy population, clinicians should be parsimonious with treatment in the absence of symptoms, such as pain and range of motion deficits. Furthermore, until the threshold between normal and abnormal asymmetries can be defined, one should be cautious in classifying these scapular asymmetries as pathology. Additionally, the authors found the scapula can be fairly symmetrical in a resting position, which may highlight a kinematic origin for scapular asymmetries. Since previous research has implicated postural differences, particularly among an athletic population, we may still need to consider the resting scapular position when developing a rehabilitation regimen for our patient. The authors note there are difficulties to extrapolating the data from the current participants to other clinical populations, given the influence of age, sex, and level of physical activity. Regardless of these limitations, one should be careful when using the contralateral shoulder as a reference given the inherent subtle differences in scapular motion between dominant and non-dominant sides. This past week, we also had one other post on sportsmedres.org, that's res.org. This post described a study which found that older male cross-country skiers are more likely to have atrial fibrillation than the general population, but participation in leisure time physical activity may mitigate the development of atrial fibrillation. Don't forget that we also share extra material on social media. For example, this past week, our social media posts included a study that reported that there may be a higher incidence of turf toe injuries during games, a greater susceptibility among running backs and quarterbacks, and a significant contribution of playing surface to risk of turf toe injury. So remember to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, or LinkedIn. We'll be back next week with more sports medicine research. Until then, have a fun one.